We had some unwelcome guests at our place Friday a week ago. I'd been out for a couple of hours, and as I came back in the driveway, one of our guests bolted out our front door and up the street. I followed him in the car. I'm not a brave person, but I don't know why. I followed him, and he jumped over someone's front fence. I got out of the car and yelled at him, at which point he jumped over someone else's fence and he was gone. It didn't occur to me that there might be someone else back at the house, but I'm pretty sure there was, because when I got back, my bike was gone. So I reckon he's gone the other way on the bike with a little bag of stuff. Now, we're all okay. No one was hurt. We weren't specially attached to anything that was taken, and it's all insured. So don't worry about us. But it reminds me of what Jesus said. Jesus said, don't store up treasures on earth where thieves break in and steal and where moth and rust destroy, but store up for yourself treasures in heaven where thieves can't break in and steal and where moth and rust don't destroy. He said, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So Jesus is very interested in our attitudes to wealth. He's less interested in how much we've got, much more interested in the attitude that we have to wealth. He goes on to say, you can't serve two masters. Either you will love the one and hate the other, or you will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Now, for Christians living in the Western world, we need to be very conscious of that. Because the alternative God for us tends to be wealth. Not necessarily the money itself, but what wealth brings us. Whether it's the security that it brings us, whether it's the access to a whole variety of experiences that it brings us. This is really important stuff that we're thinking about today, as we listen to the wisdom that comes from Psalm 49. Jesus often spoke about wealth. We heard that little section where he speaks about the rich fool. It's just one of the many things that Jesus said about wealth. He speaks about it again and again. What we do with our money and the attitude that we have says a lot about where our hearts are. So this psalm, Psalm 49, have you got it open in front of you? That will help if you've got Psalm 49 open in front of you. This psalm addresses people who feel like they don't have much money, who feel overwhelmed by wealthy people. And there's the point where the psalmist describes a sense of powerlessness in the face of people who are doing bad things to him. Now, for me, this is quite real. I can be overawed by someone who is wealthy. When I became the senior minister at St Ives, this was one of the fears that I had as I came, that I'd be confronted by wealthy people who were used to throwing their weight around. Now, one of the lovely things is, we came to St Ives, we met some very wealthy people who are also godly people. And money in the hands of a godly, generous person is a very good thing. And it's been a real delight to meet people who are very liberal with their wealth. But the issue in the psalm is this issue of being overawed by someone who's wealthy. Now, I don't know if you liked it or saw it, but I loved the movie The Castle. Have we got the image there, Mark, of The Castle? Do you remember the Kerrigan family? They loved living right next door to the airport, because every time they heard a jumbo go over the top, it reminded them of the technology. You know, it was just fantastic that these things could fly. They were right under the power lines, in fact. And so there's the Kerrigan family. But of course, the story, the drama, is that the airport wants to take over their land. And the Kerrigans are not a wealthy family, although they think of their place as a castle. And Daryl in particular is convinced that no one can take this place away from them. That is, until they meet the airport's lawyers. And the Kerrigans can only afford to hire Daryl Dennis DeNutto. Can we see the image of Dennis? There he is, in court. He's talking about the vibe of the Australian Constitution. So the Kerrigans can only afford to hire Dennis. Now, that is the story of a lot of people. A lot of people come across someone wealthy, and even if they're in the right, the wealthy person, it happens this way, can often afford to pay better lawyers, and so they're powerless. And so we have all sorts of legal aid options here available in Australia, which is good, but it's not as good as the airport could pay for. They had a whole string of lawyers lined up against the Kerrigan family. Now, maybe you found yourself in that sort of situation. Maybe you've been just overwhelmed by the power of someone that you've been on the opposite side of. Maybe you don't feel like that. Maybe you're not overawed by the wealthy person. Maybe you feel quite secure with your level of wealth. Maybe you're a wealthy person. Maybe not compared to Bill Gates, or maybe not compared to some of the other people living in this part of the world, but maybe you feel quite secure because you've got your castle, or because you've got your super, or whatever it is. So what does the Lord Jesus say? What does the Bible say to these kind of attitudes that we have in regards to our wealth, in regards to wealthy people? Something worth noticing about the Psalm 49 is that it addresses all people. Did you notice that in verses 1 and 2? Hear this, all you peoples. Listen, all who live in this world, both low and high, rich and poor alike. So whatever this psalm says, it says to everybody. This is wisdom. This is stuff you need to know in order to live well. That's really what wisdom is. It's knowing how to respond to the situation you find yourself in. And so there's wisdom in this psalm, in these few verses, whether you're wealthy or whether you're not. Whether you're high and you feel up there, or whether you're low, you feel down there. So what does it say? What does it say? Well, it is addressing this fear issue, verse 5. Why should I fear, says the psalmist, when evil days come, when wicked deceivers surround me, those who trust in their wealth and boast of their great riches? See, that's the issue that this psalm is probing into. You can understand why someone might fear when evil is being done to them by someone who is powerful, by someone who is throwing their weight around. So what is the wisdom of this psalm for the poor person and for the wealthy person? For the person who is low, for the person who is high? In many ways, I think what the psalm says, the heart of it is there in verse 12. Just have a look at that. It says, but man, despite his riches, does not endure. And here's a somber thought. He's like the beasts that perish. There's the wisdom of this psalm. If you're overawed by someone who is wealthy and powerful, if you kind of get a bit nervous when you meet them, when you realise how wealthy they are, if you're feeling like you're up against someone who is very powerful, verse 12 says, this is the thing you need to take notice of. Man, despite his riches, does not endure. He's like the beasts that perish. It's not something that we like to think about, is it? We don't like to think about the brevity of our lives, but it's a reality, isn't it? Here we are, it's June 30. David and I didn't design it particularly that we'd have a psalm on wealth at the end of the financial year. But there you go. What do they say? There's two certainties in life. Death and taxes. So we're very aware of the taxes on June 30, but it's a truism, isn't it? That the other certainty is death. And what the psalm is saying, what this part of God's word is saying is, Taking account of this will help you if you find yourself overawed by someone who's wealthy. And there is great wisdom here, isn't there? Because especially in the Western world, when we've put God to one side, we've sought certainty, we've sought security, we've sought permanence somewhere else. And this is what wealth offers us. Wealth offers us security, ultimate security. I think this is what drives much of Australian society. Much of our interest these days in how we're performing economically, much of the analysis of our political parties is about what they're doing to provide us with this security, this sense of certainty in the world. Because largely we've forgotten about God and we've abandoned God. But what verse 12 says is, that is a really dumb way of thinking. Man, despite his riches, does not endure. Despite his riches, man does not endure. So go back to verse 7 and we'll see what the significance of this is for us. No man, it says, despite, no man can redeem the life of another or give to God a ransom for him. The ransom for a life is costly. No payment is ever enough that he should live on forever and not see decay. See, one of the reasons why wealth can be daunting is because it gives this illusion of permanence. The psalm presents us with a brutal wisdom. It's not an easy wisdom to sit with. It's not a comfortable wisdom to sit with. It confronts us with the reality of death and the way that death will rob us of all of the wealth that we have accumulated. See, this is a brutal wisdom. Verse 10, wow. For all can see that wise men die. The foolish and the senseless alike perish and leave their wealth to others. Their tombs will remain their houses forever, their dwellings for endless generations, though they had named lands after themselves. Now, sometimes do you hear the question, what did he leave behind? And the only answer is everything. Everything that's been accumulated here on earth. Now, have we got that next image, Mark? This is Cecil Rhodes. I don't know whether some of you may know more about him than me, but as I was getting ready for this, it occurred to me that Rhodes was a wealthy man. He's the guy that named the country of Rhodesia after himself. He lived quite a while ago, back in the 19th century. He founded the diamond company, De Beers. He colonised part of southern Africa. Rhodesia is now, we know of as Zimbabwe and Zambia, two nations. But for all of the massive resources that Rhodes gathered to himself, there came a day when Rhodes died. He didn't have enough, despite all of his wealth, to buy himself another day. And he left everything behind. There was nothing that he took with him to the grave. I can imagine people in his day, and I don't know that much about him, but I can imagine people being completely daunted by this guy who owns so much, who has so much power. But the wisdom of Psalm 49 is, if you're daunted by him or by someone like him, remember the wealth that he's got is temporary. Remember that it won't buy him anything into eternity. What the psalm says is the nearest thing we can find to permanence here is the grave. See, wisdom in the face of death says that wealth and poverty doesn't matter. All are equal in death. Death is a great leveller, as they say. Now, that's a sombre thought. It's not a pleasant thought, but you'd be a fool to disregard it. You'd be a fool to try and live now like as if that reality is not a reality at all. So verse 16, we're coming towards the conclusion of the psalm, says, "Don't be overawed when a man grows rich, when the splendour of his house increases. For he will take nothing with him when he dies. His splendour will not descend with him. Though while he lived, he counted himself blessed, and men praise you when you prosper, he will join the generation of his fathers, who will never see the light of life. A man who has riches without understanding is like the beasts that perish." So can you see, it's not the wealth that's the problem, it's the riches which lack understanding. That is the person who's no better than the beast that perishes. A wealthy fool is like beasts which perish. It's an awful comparison, isn't it? You drive out in the country, you see a sheep chewing on a bit of grass. Just think about that sheep for a moment. You've got the picture of the woolly animal out there in the paddock. He's happily chewing on the grass, oblivious to the day when his throat will be slit. Because that's why the farmer has bred him. That's why the farmer's got him there out in the paddock. See, we heard that story read earlier that Jesus tells of the man that he describes as a fool. Now, very few people in Australia would call him a fool, because he's reached the great Australian dream. He's worked hard, he's invested wisely, and he's reached a stage in life where he can sit back and just enjoy life. Jesus calls him a fool. He says, "I've got all I want." And Jesus says he's a fool. He's like a sheep out in the paddock chewing a bit of grass. See, a man who has riches but has not taken account of his death and of the reality of judgment, that man might seem daunting, but he ought to be no more daunting to you than a sheep chewing on a bit of grass. That's the wisdom of this psalm. Death changes everything. Now, this psalm isn't an attack on the wealthy. What it is an attack on the attitude which sees wealth as in some way permanent. It's an attack on the attitude which desires to find permanence in this life, which desires to find permanence in wealth. See, in the face of death, wealth is a really dumb place to look for permanence, for security. So that's the wisdom of this psalm. It's not a happy place to go in lots of ways, but it's a good place to go. If it knocks something out of the way, if it knocks away a false foundation, it's done a good thing. It's done a really helpful thing for us. Wealth, prestige, the achievements that come with them are short-lived. So don't be daunted by something which is so fleeting. That's the wisdom of this psalm. I understand you've been reading Ecclesiastes here on Sunday mornings. Do you hear echoes from Ecclesiastes here? It's very similar, isn't it? The writer of Ecclesiastes...